You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch this season, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi made for football watching. And we are back, Kevin Ostreicher, here with you. And it is the end of our Steelers week shows, but honestly, we have Matthew Stevens here. And Matthew, it feels like this whole weekend, it's just beginning, and the whole week leading up to this Pittsburgh Steelers game, 6-0 Steelers, 5-1 Ravens. It's going to be a good one. How you doing today?
Dude, I'm doing great, and you're 100% right. You know, this is, I got into football based on these matchups. You know, I mean, when I was a kid. And it's nice to kind of return back to some of that familiarity this week in what has been a downright awful and confusing and weird year. We're getting back to some kind of familiar faces, some familiar names, and that little bit of like comfort food that is cold football Ravens Steelers.
Yeah, and you go back, you know, all the years ago when, you know, this rivalry was – it was humming. The rivalry was humming, and it seems to have slowed down over the last few years, but that doesn't mean it's not still one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports, and it just feels different this year to be Matthew, and we're going to get into our Steelers at Ravens preview in our second and third segments, but I want to start off here, Matthew, with some trade talk and with some Dez Bryant talk, because the news of the week for Baltimore was Dez Bryant signing to the practice squad, probably one of the more famous practice squad signings in NFL history. But with the rules this year, you can add these veterans to the practice squad and see what's going on with them. And this is exactly what the Ravens are doing with Dez Bryant. So Matthew, with Dez Bryant officially signed to the practice squad, we've seen him in practice. We've seen, you know, just snippets here and there of him working out with the Ravens receivers. What was your initial reaction to the signing, and what role do you ultimately expect him to play when it's all said and done?
Well, we were certainly teased it for the longest time where, you know, the report came out like a week earlier saying that Baltimore was going to sign him to the practice squad. So when the deal finally happened, you know, it was kind of like, all right, well, we've, you know, already thought largely about this. But I, you know, I think it was a great move. When Baltimore originally brought him in that first time for a workout, it's one of those deals that you look at and you go, look, no one else is really signing him right now. No one else is at least bringing him in on any of these workouts. It's a low cost, low risk, high reward type of signing. You know, if Dez Bryant is anywhere close to his prime, granted, he's probably not, but if he's anywhere close to his prime, you know, you've got a really good wide receiver. Even if he's kind of late career type of possession receiver, that fits in exactly with what Baltimore needs. They need that Anquan Boldin, a guy who's not going to beat you deep. He's not running a 4.340, but he is a guy that can go ahead and run a 7-yard out and catch the football. Maybe go ahead and out-muscle a guy for a ball in the red zone, that type of thing. And that's what Baltimore doesn't have right now when you factor in the fact that, you know, Marquise Brown is your deep threat, but he's not really a muscly guy. He's not really a guy that's going to go ahead and bowl anyone over. And you've got Mark Andrews, who, you know, if I'm a defense, I'm putting like 7 guys on him just to make sure you don't throw to him. So it's hard to hate on this deal, man. And bringing him in on the practice squad, you get a chance to see what he's really capable of doing for a week or two before you go, should we pull him off and put him on the 53-man roster? Should we just bump him up as that practice squad addition? Or is he not really going to be all that useful to us in the long term? Great move overall by Baltimore. And you got a hungry guy who has a chip on his shoulder, so can't go wrong with that either.
No, absolutely. And I think this is almost a perfect signing. Obviously, you probably want a guy who could potentially contribute right away. And Dez Bryant could be available as early as next week. I don't see him suiting up for this Pittsburgh Steelers game. But if he's out there again, yes, you're not asking him to be a deep threat. You're not asking him to blow by anybody. You're honestly not even asking him to come in and be the number two option in the passing game. You're asking him to play his role well. And I think that he's completely capable of doing that in the workout. You know, John Harbaugh said the workout went well. Good day of practice for him. So I think that for the Ravens, this signing will ultimately pay some type of dividends. I just don't know how much, you know, the signing will pay off for Baltimore. But I know that I think it probably will pay off to a certain extent. But Matthew, we heard everything about the Yannick Ngakoue trade. We've analyzed it. You know, fans are wanting more, though. Everybody seems to have a different perception, a different mindset around this trade deadline. It is a different trade deadline because of all that's been happening with COVID and with this season. So Baltimore right now, they're thin at a couple positions, and there seems to be a plethora of guys that are available, although we haven't seen, you know, a ton of movement on the trade front. Do you expect Baltimore to go out and make another move based off of everything that you might have heard? And if they do go out and make another move, what would your ideal position be?
I think Eric DaCosta, the Ravens general manager, is at least calling people. He's at least gauging some interest to see what is available out there, what the cost is going to be, and then kind of weighing all that stuff together. You know, it takes two to tango for what it's worth. And while Baltimore might be looking for a wide receiver or a tight end more specifically, you know, they're probably not going to go ahead and pay a first round pick for a guy like Brandon Cooks, let's just say. You know, so if that's what teams are wanting for their guys, Baltimore's going to go, look, we'll pass. We're A-okay where we're at right now. We'll make do. If there is a deal available where you could get a guy like, again, like a Brandon Cooks or a Michael Gallup or, you know, any number of those guys, and it's a fair value deal, Baltimore, I'm sure, is going to be all over it. That really is one of their weak spots right now. And as we just discussed here with Dez Bryant, Baltimore needs that kind of big-bodied red zone possession receiver that they don't really have right now. And you know, if you're in the middle of a Super Bowl hunt, which Baltimore is, you don't want to have to sit there and go, all right, look, is Miles Boykin going to turn into that in the second half of the season? Is Nick Boyle going to become more open? Are we going to see Devin Duvernay do a little bit more? You want to have somebody that you kind of know can do it, which is why you would go out and go make a trade here at the trade deadline. So to answer your question, Kevin, yes, I think they're interested in it. But the key here is what's available, what's the cost going to be, and does that make any sense for Baltimore?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think Baltimore is looking, you mentioned, is looking at making other moves. And trades aren't the only types of moves here, Matthew. There are plenty of other ways that the Ravens could add someone. Free agency being another. And we've talked on this show before maybe about potentially a Brandon Carr coming back, or maybe Baltimore looking at the scrap heap for wide receivers there. So if a trade isn't made, if the trade deadline comes and goes without a Ravens acquisition through the trade front, would you see them potentially bringing in somebody on the 53-man from free agency who could contribute?
I mean, again, I think this is a team that is going to constantly keep looking for that type of stuff. They're going to constantly keep trying to see who's out there. And again, what value they could hold to this team, both short and potentially long term. As far as bringing anyone in, you know, this season on from a free agent standpoint, I doubt it. You know, Baltimore, if they absolutely need it to, they probably would have already done it. You wouldn't necessarily wait too much longer for those types of moves, mainly because it takes a little while to get through the COVID-19 protocols in order to just get into the facility. It takes a little while to get up to speed. And realistically, the time you would have wanted to have done that free agent wise would have been during the bye week. So you have the time to get everyone kind of up to speed on the practice field and in the playbook and in meetings without necessarily having to carve out specific time for guys in game weeks that actually matter and taking away from those preparations. Anything can happen. Anything will happen. And I'm sure Baltimore is going to bring in a series of guys throughout the rest of the season. But you're not going to get, I don't think, a major name coming in there. You're not going to get like a Clay Matthews in here all of a sudden, barring an injury somewhere else.
Yeah, I could see Baltimore, you know, we've talked to maybe bringing in Brandon Carr. But other than that, even just looking at who's available right now, the free agency pool in general is not as strong as I've seen in recent years, especially in season. I mean, obviously, that's because the guys are getting signed. Teams have needed COVID replacements. There's a lot of moving parts this season in 2020. So overall for Baltimore, I agree. I think if Baltimore was going to make a move like this, it would have made sense for them to do it during the bye week, because then, as you mentioned, you can get everybody acclimated with the playbook, with what it takes to be a Raven, and all the other good stuff that goes into that. So for Baltimore, sure, I could see maybe an injury replacement here or there, but with the needs right now, primarily being in the secondary and wide receivers, potentially maybe some interior offensive linemen, free agency for me, I think, would be a lot more far-fetched than I think a trade would be at this point. But we're going to head into our first break now, and when we get back, we'll be starting our preview of the Steelers at Ravens showdown, talking about the Ravens offense going up against that great Pittsburgh defense. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi's here to get you ready for game day. No matter how you watch, Pepsi's the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do. Break through your wall, whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Go every day. It comes in three delicious flavors: peanut butter, honey, chocolate, coconut, and chocolate mint. Visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. We are back here for round two of our Purple Friday Locked On Ravens episode here on Steelers Week. Kevin Oshecker still here with Matthew Stevens of Ravens Wire. And Matthew, if the Chiefs game wasn't the game of the year for Baltimore so far, this game has to be it. Ravens and Steelers, the undefeated Steelers coming into M&T Bank Stadium. And the last time an undefeated team came into M&T Bank Stadium, it was those New England Patriots last year, and the Ravens manhandled them. So hopefully the same result happens on Sunday with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Matthew, let's start off with the Ravens offense, and that Ravens offense starts with Lamar Jackson. So I think we'll start with him too. Lamar Jackson, I think he's had a pretty decent year. Now, not the stat season we've seen from him, particularly from last year. People have said, oh, he's fallen off. His stats have gone completely down the drain. He hasn't looked as impressive, this, that, and the other. Well, I think, Matthew, coming off of this bye week, he will be a lot more focused and a lot sharper. I think a lot of people forget that this Ravens team, the whole NFL, had no preseason, a very limited offseason, and there have been questions and concerns about just how good this offense really is. So on Sunday, Matthew, what are you expecting from Lamar Jackson?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, I got to say, you know, statistically and even kind of what Lamar was able to do last year, I know a lot of people point to kind of the second half of the season as Lamar turned it on and suddenly became an MVP player. I mean, the likelihood of that happening again is pretty slim. Let's just be honest about it. As much as I would love to see it happen, it was kind of you don't want to say a fluke, but it was not a very often thing that happens. It's something that is pretty rare. So the second half of the season, you know, we might see some improvement. We might see some development there in a number of ways. But he's probably not going to turn into Patrick Mahomes this week and then play that way for the rest of the season. So, you know, what you have to do is you have to judge what you've seen off these first 6 weeks and kind of the trend that he was going and some of the things they've talked about that they wanted to improve. And the main thing there is just get everyone on the same page. You mentioned no preseason. You mentioned the limited offseason, the limited training camp. Those things certainly affected Lamar. And I think that was pretty clear through these first few games. You're seeing him make some more mistakes. You're also seeing defenses know how to defend him a little bit more, know where to go ahead and stack guys in order to beat him, or at least get him confused and have him make poor decisions. So what I'd like to see out of Lamar this week is, again, playing smarter football. Know when to run, know when to hold it, know when to throw it, know when to throw it away, more importantly. Being able to make quick reads, he's going to have to do that against this Pittsburgh Steelers defense because they get after the quarterback, and you best believe they're going to send pressure at Lamar Jackson to test how quick he can go ahead and make reads and make accurate throws. And then beyond that, the rest of the season, I want to see more of those deep shots actually get connected. So far through six games, Baltimore has done more of the deep throws than we've seen last season, but they're hitting on a far smaller percentage of them. And ultimately, that's helping kill drives, which is why you're bringing in a guy like Dez Bryant, who can hopefully become that possession receiver, help you get stay on the field on third downs, turn those into first downs again, so that way you can take some more deep shots, and it doesn't necessarily kill your drive. So I want to see that type of stuff out of Lamar. I want to see him play not conservatively like we've seen these first 6 weeks, where I feel like he has gone into the season with everyone saying, look, you can't throw outside the numbers, you're not a great deep passer, and him going, fine, then all I'm going to do is throw outside the numbers and throw deep, to which he's not great at. So the end results are not great. I want to see him throw to the middle of the field. I want to see him go ahead and take off running for 50 yards when a lane's wide open and nobody's getting open to throw to. I want to see those types of plays from Lamar again, because when you do, he tends to really have a great game overall. We saw that against Philadelphia, a 92.5 passer rating, one touchdown through the air, one touchdown on the ground, 108 yards the first time he's cracked 100 yards this season on the ground. I want to see that against this Pittsburgh team, who I think might be a little too aggressive against him.
Yeah, you know, certainly room for improvement with Lamar Jackson, but through the first 6 weeks of Baltimore's schedule, again, I think everything just needs to click for the whole offense in general. And obviously, Lamar Jackson is going to face the brunt of the blame because he is what makes the offense churn. I mean, there are no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But I think that against the Steelers, this is a very good defense. You mentioned it is a very aggressive defense. He's probably going to have to get the ball out quickly. He's going to have to progress through his reads a lot quicker than I think he's used to, especially against the defenses that he's played against. But also, I think Baltimore's offensive line, you know, they need to perform better to him. We'll talk about that in a few minutes here. But Matthew, another big storyline in this game is with the Ravens rushing attack. Mark Ingram did not practice on Wednesday and did not practice on Thursday. His status seems very up in the air with an ankle injury. So what you have now is, if Mark Ingram does not play, it'll be Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins with some Justice Hill thrown in there too. How much would Mark Ingram's absence affect this Ravens offense?
Well, I think, you know, if we look at last year, it's probably going to be a lot. If we look at this year, I don't think Mark Ingram is playing terrific football. So, you know, you've got two younger guys, two guys that have been performing better than Mark Ingram, largely speaking. This might just be the perfect instance where a guy's a little banged up and you're allowed to get your second and third option on the field, and they outperform your first option, and you go, all right, maybe we should just go with the two and three then. That's what I'm kind of hoping. And certainly I think Baltimore's game plan is going to be dependent on those two guys doing really well. You look to last season, week 17 against the Pittsburgh Steelers, Robert Griffin at quarterback, because they sat a majority of the starters. You know, Baltimore had a lot of success running right at the blitz that they were sending, running right at the pressure they were sending into Robert Griffin. So if Baltimore's going to have similar success, if Pittsburgh's going to run a very similar scheme, and it looks like they probably will, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins have to hit the hole fast. They have to hit it hard. They have to be willing to put a shoulder down and make that first contact and make it count. I'd like to think it's going to go ahead and make a big difference for those guys, and they're going to get a chance to show off, but that really is going to be, I think, a defining point. How well they do will determine if Baltimore wins this game or not, honestly.
Yeah, we saw the effect that Mark Ingram out of the offense had on the Ravens last year. This year, I do think it's different, though. You mentioned I haven't been overly impressed with Ingram this year. Maybe that calf injury still lingers, and it honestly was a lot worse than people thought it was. And I think we found out it was a lot worse than people thought it was. But I'm confident with Edwards and Dobbins, even Justice Hill, who actually has not received a carry this year, which is actually kind of surprising to me. But the offense, I think, again, it's going to have to go through the running game. But if you can establish a good run game, especially on first down, the Ravens have struggled on first down this season, it really does open up the rest of the offense. But Matthew, I think we do have to talk a bit about this offensive line, because they have struggled. And obviously, all the penalties did not come against them in the Eagles game, but 12 penalties for 132 yards, I believe it was, is something you never want to hear coming out of a game. But that's what happened. We saw illegal formations and holdings and blocks in the back and false starts and all this different stuff. This offensive line surely has to play better than how it was doing during the first half of the season, right?
You'd have to hope so. You know, it's I got a lot of flack for saying that Baltimore was not nearly as good as their record says they are. And a lot of it has to do with those penalties. A really good team doesn't commit 14 penalties. Two of them were actually declined. So good teams don't do that. They don't do it against bad opponents. They don't let bad opponents go ahead and show up in the second half. They play 60 minutes of football. They put inferior teams to bed early. And that's what we saw out of Baltimore in the second half of last season. That's why they were such a phenomenal team, because by halftime it was over. It was time for Robert Griffin to come in, go ahead and do his part. Maybe you'd keep Lamar in for a little bit longer, pad his stats, and just make sure the game's out of the way. Baltimore hasn't been able to really do that this season, despite playing against a lot of really bad teams. The offensive line is a big portion of that. And as much as missing Marshall Yanda is a great excuse for this, that's one guy out of five. And he's not the left side of the line. He's not the tackles. He's not everything. So as great as Marshall Yanda always was, these issues that Baltimore's having are kind of systemic to maybe just getting a little bit away from what they did really well last year, which was take the guy in front of you and run him into the stands. And you're seeing Baltimore would be a little bit more cute with their run game this year, a little bit more creative. They're pulling, I think, a little bit more than what they were last year. Hopefully at the bye, they just got those guys hungry. They got those guys angry and said, look, take the guy that's in front of you and push him into the secondary. If you've got TJ Watt, push him into Minka Fitzpatrick 30 yards down the field, please. Hopefully that's what we see this week. If that's the case, then I will be all over Baltimore as one of the best teams in the league, because they will go out there and dominate Pittsburgh. If they don't, it's going to be a bad day.
And kind of going off that, Matthew, what do you think this offensive line combination is going to look like, especially on the interior? We know Ronnie Stanley will be the left tackle. Orlando Brown will be the right tackle. Bradley Bilson will be playing left guard. And Matt Skura is going to be most likely playing center unless something really drastic has changed. But that right guard position has really been a revolving door. We have not seen the play that we were hoping from guys like Tyree Phillips and Patrick McCurry. Who do you think draws the start on Sunday?
Man, that's a huge question, and it's one that I honestly don't have the answer to. I would have figured by now Phillips is not playing well, and that's certainly not a shock to anyone. PFF has him graded as a 48.8. That is 71st out of 77 guards in this league. Not great is the best way of saying that. I would have figured by now, a rookie, you're going to pull him out there, say, look, it's not you, it's us right now. You'll get it eventually, but let's put Ben Powers in there. Let's put McCurry out there. Let's put DJ Fluker out there. You know what? Let's put just about anyone else out there and see what happens. Baltimore's been really hesitant to do that. I know Phillips hasn't played 100% of the snaps due to injury, but they haven't really tried to pull him out this far. He very well could start this week, and I got no answer for it, to be honest with you. He can't be the best right guard that Baltimore has. They've got seven of them. There's no way Phillips, playing the way he is right now, is the best right guard that Baltimore has. So you have to wonder, why are they shoving him out there? Why are they continuing to play him? Is it a long game thing where you're going, look, you know, yeah, he's not playing great right now, but come the playoffs, he'll have 16 games under his belt. He'll have a chance to, he'll be a little bit more experienced. He'll know what's happening. He'll play better by that point, or even in the future. Or is it just something where, like, you know, you're looking at Ben Powers and going, he's clearly not the answer. You're looking at DJ Fluker, he's clearly not the answer. And Phillips really is the best player. So, yeah, I mean, again, to answer your question, Kevin, I don't know what's happening there. The answer is nothing positive at right guard. And I hope they make a change this week, or we see Phillips play out of his mind this week and he's able to go ahead and turn it around in the second half of the season. But it is kind of their biggest sticking point on that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody would like to know who the starter is going to be for Sunday. And honestly, moving forward, you know, I'm pretty guilty of, I wouldn't say devaluing Marshall Yanda, because obviously he's such a valuable piece, or he was such a valuable piece. But man, I did not expect it to be this bad on the offensive line right now. We've seen, I've tried to drive this point home all week. Gus Edwards, who's a career over 5 yards per carry runner, averaged 1.9 yards per carry against the Eagles because he had a hand on him in the backfield before he even took a step with the football. So at some point, you know, you can blame Lamar Jackson. You can blame the running backs, this, that, and the other. But if the offensive line is not giving those skill position players any time to make plays, then you have to go back to that offensive line and say, look, you know, we just can't make the plays because we don't have the time to do it. So at right guard, huge game. We saw against the great front four against the Eagles just, you know, how overpowered this line could be. And the Steelers front four, they're nothing to slouch at either. So it's going to be a huge, huge game from the offensive line, I hope, especially in the interior. But we're going to head into our final break now. And when we get back, we'll be taking a look at the Ravens defense going up against that quick-hitting Steelers offense, so stay tuned for that, and we will be right back. We are back, Purple Friday, Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostreicher here with Matthew Stevens still, and we're rounding out these Steelers Week podcasts, but Matthew, I do want to talk about this Ravens defense going up against Ben Roethlisberger and this Pittsburgh offense, and, you know, we talked a bit about Yannick Ngakoue last week, but I feel like, you know, we can't not talk about him this week because it's going to be his debut game in a huge, huge, not only rivalry game, but we could be talking about this game a few months later because of seeding implications, this, that, and the other, and all the like. So, Matthew, when you look at Yannick Ngakoue and what you're expecting from him during his first Ravens action in terms of snap count, in terms of his usage, what are you expecting?
Well, I kind of expect them to bring him along slowly. While I expect that, you know, his familiarity with a guy like Calais Campbell, they played a few years together in Jacksonville before subsequently both of them came to Baltimore this year. I expect him to be able to kind of pick it up pretty quickly, but at the same time, you don't want to overwork him in his first game. You want to bring him along slowly. You don't necessarily want him having to learn the entire playbook and try to memorize it and do everything perfectly. Not when you've got a bunch of other guys who are able to do a lot of those small things. You really just want to put them on the field and go, look, don't worry about the play. Just know that you need to go get that guy and point to Ben Roethlisberger and go hit him as hard as you possibly can on every single player out in the field. And you can just tell him to do that and he will go do that. I mean, that's really where Ngakoue is his best, is turned loose against the quarterback. That's where he's going to play his best football, and you get a chance to do that while keeping his snap count relatively low this first week. You go ahead and work him up over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Ultimately, Ngakoue is really more of a trade for potential long-term use. You get a chance to get first dibs on him this offseason and for the playoffs. I mean, Baltimore really, they did a lot this offseason to bolster their run defense, but they still needed help getting after the quarterback and not having to blitz. And as we were talking about before we started recording, you know, Baltimore is going to have like a cornerback and a half in this game potentially. You want to go ahead and be able to rush four so that way you don't need to be sending blitzes. You don't want to have to blitz your safeties and send them after the quarterback, because that's going to leave your guys, your defensive backs, one-on-one on the outside, one-on-one on the inside. You don't want to have to do that a lot with your linebackers. Very much the same thing. Baltimore's been getting beat a lot over the last few years in the middle of the defense, mainly because they've had to send those blitzes. So if you can get pressure with four guys, maybe five guys tops, you don't have to go ahead and send your cornerbacks in. You don't have to send the safeties in. You don't have to send the linebackers, the inside linebackers in. You get a chance to drop all those guys back into coverage, and you get to play with how aggressive you are. You get a chance to maybe look like you're going to, hey, look, we're going to send everybody on this play, and then you drop seven guys back. That's going to mess with any quarterback. You have no idea what to look for on this Ravens defense any longer, because all the film you have under Don Martindale is just a boatload of blitzing. They're coming from everywhere all the time. You show those same looks and you drop a guy back, somebody's going to get a pick. And that's what you're hoping for if you're Baltimore. Same production, maybe a little bit more production, but you don't have to go ahead and send everybody all the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned those 1.5 corners, Matthew. Well, you might be being pretty generous there. I mean, Baltimore is absolutely depleted in the secondary. They entered the week with four corners and four safeties on the active roster, with Marcus Gilchrist waiting on the practice squad. They cut Gilchrist. Marlon Humphrey missed practice with an illness. He's back at practice, though. Full strength practice for him yesterday. And then Jimmy Smith now with this Achilles injury that seemed to have popped up late here in this week. Wasn't on the injury report with it leading up to the bye, and suddenly comes out of the bye with it. Limited participant on Wednesday. No participation on Thursday. So, Matthew, when you look at just how thin the Ravens are in the secondary right now, you could be looking at, if Jimmy Smith is out, a cornerback rotation of Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters, and Khalil Dorsey, with potentially Terrell Bonds or Nate Harrison called up from the practice squad. And then safety-wise, you might be calling up Geno Stone here to work in with Deshaun Elliott, Anthony Levine, and Chuck Clark. What are you seeing here with the secondary, and how concerned are you with how thin it is right now?
Very concerned. I mean, I think you have to be. Baltimore seems to go through this every single year. And again, we were talking about before we started recording here, you know, a few years ago, Baltimore's just signing dudes off the street and going, please put on a helmet and just line up. Just do something. Just stand out there, wave your arms a little bit if you can. Like, it was bad a few years ago. It seems to happen every single year with this team, at cornerback specifically. Part of that is, you know, Baltimore, last year they entered the regular season with like five defensive lineman. A guy or two gets injured, all of a sudden you're going, ooh, we don't have any depth. We can barely put out a starting lineup. Baltimore did a very similar thing this year with cornerbacks. I believe they started the season with five. You had Tavon Young go down. You had Iman Marshall go down. You now have Anthony Averett down. Potentially Jimmy Smith isn't going to play in this one. All of a sudden you're missing four cornerbacks. That's a problem when you started out with five. You know, and that's before we even get into guys that are going to be trying to come off the practice squad or anything like that. It's hurting them. It's clearly hurting them. And I think that's a big reason why they traded for Ngakoue, is because, again, like I had mentioned in the last segment, you don't necessarily have to send blitzes in from the secondary. You can just leave those guys back there to do what they do. Not necessarily going to keep them any healthier, but you don't have to expose guys as much as you did previously. And that's going to be especially important when you're putting out Khalil Dorsey and Terrell Bonds and potentially Geno Stone out on the field against a team that has, I mean, look, hand it to Pittsburgh. They know how to make wide receivers like nobody's business. If Baltimore can breed linebackers, Pittsburgh Steelers can breed linebackers and wide receivers. So give it to them there. Baltimore's going to have their hands full. And again, I think that's part of the reason why they traded for Ngakoue to begin with.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And this game is really going to come down to, you know, both teams have very nice depth at a lot of different positions. Baltimore obviously struggling in the secondary, but for this quick hitting Steelers offense, I don't think they necessarily need it as much as they might need it in other games, especially not the deep safeties where Marcus Gilchrist was providing you that safety to the moon. You put him in the middle of the field where no one is, and you're able to bring up Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark. So maybe the Ravens have a plan here. Maybe there'll be an acquisition later in the week. Who knows? But heading into Sunday, Baltimore is surely lacking just in the bodies department in their secondary. But finally here, Matthew, let's get into some final score predictions for this game. How do you see this one going?
I see the Steelers winning this one. I look at what the Ravens have done in their six games, not what they could potentially do, not what they could potentially become, not what they were last year, not what, all the talent in the world on paper says they are. I look at what they've done. And you have an offense that is wildly inconsistent. You've got a defense that is playing great, but ultimately gets tired at the end of a game because the offense isn't controlling the clock, because the offense isn't staying on the field, and you're running these guys ragged for a long period of time. So what I kind of expect to happen is an old-school Ravens-Steelers football game. It's going to be a lot of run. It's going to be heavy on the ground. You're going to see some potential big plays in the passing game, but both these offenses are going to want to get the ball out quickly. Nobody, you know, in Pittsburgh wants to see Ben Roethlisberger take a hit from Calais Campbell completely unblocked, or Judon or Ngakoue or Patrick Queen completely unblocked. That's a great way to go ahead and start Mason Rudolph again. At the same time, you don't want, if you're Baltimore, you don't want, you know, that fearsome Pittsburgh Steelers front getting after Lamar Jackson and you know, kind of sitting on him all game. That's going to be a recipe for a loss in your own right there too. So you're going to use the run a lot, which means it's going to be a relatively low scoring game. But unfortunately, Pittsburgh, you know, you've got a veteran quarterback who's been doing this since like I was like 4 years old or something, despite being 32 now or whatever age I am. You got a veteran quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger who has a knack for putting up points in the final drives. That's kind of what I see happening. Baltimore's going to hold him off, maybe even have the lead coming into the final 2 minutes. Ben Roethlisberger, dink, 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 down the field until he's able to go ahead and either put it in the end zone or they get the field goal as necessary to just barely edge out the Ravens. I see it 23-20 in favor of the Steelers. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we see Lamar Jackson and this offense show what they did last year, and I hope this defense goes from really scary to historically scary with the trade of Ngakoue. But again, the last six games are going to dictate what I think is happening here, and that's Baltimore just barely gets edged out by an undefeated team.
I don't feel very confident in this game, but what I do feel confident in is my bold prediction that the Ravens will not lose another game during the regular season, and I'm going to stick to it. You know, this is going to be a tight game, I think very low scoring. I'm going to say Baltimore edges out the Steelers 20-17, and it'll be the kicker difference that ends up doing it. Justin Tucker, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, of all time. But again, Baltimore is going to find out very early in this game that they cannot blitz and win. You know, you can talk all you want about the press, and I think that that's what they have to do. They have to press at the line and also, you know, rush four, rush five. If you're blitzing against the Steelers team and your pressure doesn't get there, we saw it against the Chiefs, they're going to absolutely pick you apart. And you have Ngakoue now, who is a specialist at winning one-on-one matchups. So for Baltimore, at the end of the day, I do think that they will edge out the Steelers by the final score of 20-17. But Matthew, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show here. And hopefully you are wrong and I'm right with our predictions and Baltimore's able to move to 6-1 and move to first place in the AFC North.
Absolutely. I agree with that too. And, you know, I'll add this addendum to it. If Lamar Jackson shows up the way that we saw the last 8 games or so last season, Baltimore wins like 40-12. It's going to be a slaughter on behalf of the Ravens, but that requires Lamar Jackson to show up and be that MVP quarterback we saw last year.
Absolutely. And honestly, it's just been too long without Ravens football. It's been a long 2 weeks here, and I can't wait to see Baltimore just back in action, and it'll be a great game we get treated to as Baltimore returns to the NFL field. But that's all I have for you today, and that's all that we have for you this week on Steelers Week. When we get back on Monday, we'll be reviewing everything that happened in the Steelers at Ravens game, as well as talk about what happened throughout the rest of the AFC. So stay tuned for that, and I will see you on Monday.